Hello, everyone. Thank you very much. That's a very nice introduction. I'm Charlotte Mabberley, and a lot of you do know me, but for those of you who don't, I am very much concerned with food. What we have in front of us here is something I just picked up at the farmer's market this lunchtime, and I put it there because I think it's incredibly beautiful. The lighting is a little bit funny in here, so you probably can't see the colours exactly, but it's immensely colourful, some beautiful deep blues and purples in there and reds. And when we're talking about happiness, health, and well-being, I personally don't think that you can separate those three concepts. I think that they are mutually reliant, and all of them are made possible by this, by what you see in front of you. Food, to me, is the most fundamental element of happiness, health, and well-being. And I'll explain a little bit more about that. All right. But me, okay. Yes, as you heard, I'm a lecturer in gastronomy. It's the first gastronomy MSc in the UK. I've been writing the course, and I'm about to start teaching in January of next year. I am a gastronomist, and I'm also the head of Slow Food Edinburgh. And I realize that all of those three things probably need a bit of explanation, which makes me a little sad. They should be, you know, pretty well-known things, but they're not. But I'm going to start by explaining slow food. Many years ago, I was in the States, and I was looking for something. I didn't really know what it was. I knew that I loved food, but I wasn't a chef. I'm not a cook, really. And I found slow food, and I thought it was absolutely extraordinary, because it's one of the first organizations I've ever encountered that is centered around cultivating good, clean, and fair food culture, but at the heart of it, always, is pleasure. Basically, what slow food does, well, I'll go back a little bit. It started in the 1980s in Italy in reaction to fast food culture. So everything that fast food is, slow food is not. It's about bringing people back to the table, helping them reconnect with their food and find the value and beauty in eating together in conviviality. And inherent in all of that is pleasure. What slow food felt is that people nowadays have lost the ability to feel real pleasure in eating. We've forgotten how to do it. And I was very interested yesterday to hear Mary speaking about the two Aristotelian notions of happiness. One is hedonic and the other is, I can't pronounce it, eudaimonia. And she put food in the hedonic pleasures, i.e. it's just about, it's kind of instant gratification, right? I couldn't disagree more. I could not disagree more. Because the pleasure that you experience from food, from eating food, from buying food, from cooking food, from sharing it with others, I think has the potential to express and encapsulate happiness, health, well-being, and pleasure on a myriad of levels. We're talking about cultural connection, environmental connection, being aware of seasons, being aware of one another, being in touch with our own bodies, knowing our health, knowing our needs. It's about responding to the moment when you're cooking. It's about engaging all of the senses and being aware of your humanness. It's also about being politically active and a better citizen. And about being socially compassionate as well. Those things probably aren't immediately obvious to everyone. How on earth does food do those things? Honestly, in my studies, I've seen that it does very, very much so. But when I look around me here in Scotland, particularly, I don't see that happening on a big scale. Why not? Well, as far as I can see, we've become extremely disconnected from our food. We've become, well, we don't really know very much about it, to put it bluntly. That causes a tremendous amount of anxiety and worry. And as we have crazy stories about horse meat and the compromisation of our food systems, and the fact that Scotland is the third most obese nation, or the second most obese, according to some nation in the world, we have the highest instances of obesity, heart disease, diabetes, and other diet-related illnesses. And we also have a serious problem with food banks and food poverty. you know, we're in real trouble here with our food. We are really out of control with what's going on. We're not able to feed ourselves properly. We're not able to access enough food. But hang on a minute. Hang on. Because we're the land of food and drink. Did you know that? According to the Scottish government, we are the land of food and drink. And food and drink is our number one export in Scotland. Across the world, we're known as the land of food and drink, and we should be very proud of it. And yet we can't seem to feed ourselves. Our Minister for Environment and Rural Affairs, Richard Lochhead, he's acknowledged this as the Scottish paradox. He says that we need to change our entire culture if we're going to prosper as a nation. Entire culture. Similarly, Phil Hanlon, who's a professor of public health at Glasgow University, in a video made for the Fife Diet, which is a local food movement, and they've written the Scottish Food Manifesto, said, Scotland is now a post-industrial consumerist society with a variety of epidemics, diseases, and emotional and mental health issues, things like addictive behaviour, loss of well-being, and rise of depression. We need to change many aspects of our society if we're going to tackle something like obesity. What are they talking about? We need to change our entire culture. We need to change many aspects just to approach obesity. Why? I mean, surely if we're going to, you know, cease obesity, we just need to get people to exercise a bit, eat less fat, right? If people have problems with malnourishment, we'll just eat your five a day, right? No. What these men have realized, and what a lot of other people are realizing now, is that these are immensely complex issues. Like food, it's not just nutrients. This is also cultural, political, environmental. And if we're going to start tackling problems like mass obesity and malnutrition and food poverty, we have to start taking food seriously. That's not happening right now. That's not happening. There was a poll done recently, you'll all have heard about it, amongst school kids across the nation, where they asked kids to try and recognize various vegetables and foods. And a lot of kids couldn't understand that a dirty carrot was a carrot because the idea of earth and a carrot occupying the same space at the same time was so alien to them. And also, they said that fish fingers are made of chicken. Amazing. It's true. We're allowing our most vulnerable people in society to grow up unable to recognize their foods. How can we expect them to make good food choices now or when they grow up to be adults if they can't recognize what a carrot is? Right? There's a serious problem here. Okay, so perhaps we don't know our food very well, but there's another thing going on here. We're also a bit afraid of it. We have a lot of people telling us conflicting ideas like, don't eat margarine. Eat margarine, it's better for you. Eat organic, but eat local. Hang on a minute. Do I buy the thing that's organic but imported from Peru? Or do I buy the local thing that's not organic? Which one's going to kill me? Which one's not going to kill me? We're building up an anxiety around food. And you can see this in the media because we now have a lot of journalists writing books. What to eat, what not to eat. We have food manifestos. We have guidelines for those who want to extract pesticides from their diet. We have it's terrifying. And that anxiety is also exacerbating our lack of knowledge. Basically, it's a lot more comfortable to just not know about it, right? Instead, we're putting our trust into some pretty big corporations to make those decisions for us, i.e. supermarkets. We decide that those people can make the decisions about what I eat and what I don't eat and what's healthy for me. I trust them, right? They've got big, shiny buildings that I can go into. It's very well lit. It looks very clean. It must be pretty good. We're really making ourselves vulnerable and open to being manipulated. Very, very evident in the horse meat scandal and beyond. All right, so things aren't great as far as food goes. But they should be, because as I said before, food is incredibly beautiful, pleasurable, fundamental and essential for us. What happened? What's gone wrong? Well, The reason I'm here today is to advocate for a new kind of food education. Just very briefly, I want to go over something which was touched on yesterday, which is throughout history, in academia and the arts, food was considered something that was low to the ground, base, inessential, and far from academic knowledge, whereas the cerebral was placed high up, close to heaven, good. So down here we have food and sex, and up there we have, knowledge and, you know, men, actually. This is women down here, this is men up here. And so since then, there's been this perpetration of food knowledge as something which is kind of periphery, something fluffy, something you do as a hobby. It is not taken very seriously, especially in schools. However, that is changing. We now have a few fantastic initiatives going on in schools, one of which is farm schools, I want to talk about very briefly. Farm school basically is something that schools can adopt voluntarily. They can either partner up with a local farm or establish a farm in their school. And they encourage kids to turn up early for class, sometimes up to 2 hours early, which they do willingly, to come and muck out pigs, deal with chickens, do stock take, all that kind of thing. And it's been shown to cultivate or improve attendance, behavior, health and well-being, diet and nutrition. It's laid the foundation for enterprise and economic well-being in the in their community. It's given children a sense of inclusion, good transferable skills, positive links with local community, a greater sense of achievement, some relevant and applied learning, better self-esteem and confidence and life skills, and knowledge of sustainability and systems. Wow. That's amazing. Just from mucking out some pigs. Right? That just shows you the understanding where your food comes from opens the door to an education on a much wider level than just which vitamins are in that cabbage, right? Now, the reaction to some farm schools illustrates that historic dichotomy, false dichotomy of food down here, cerebral up here. Recently, back in March, there was a massive protest started against a primary school that had decided to raise some pigs. The school claimed that they wanted to teach the children provenance, right? This is in the wake of the horse meat scandal. And a protest group gained just over 4,500 signatures against the primary school of 25 students. The group said they are desensitizing the children and teaching them that pigs are lesser beings than us, and that's not right. Desensitizing? Well, if anyone's desensitizing anyone, it's the supermarket that cuts up animals and puts it into packaging so you can't tell what it is, where it came from, that it even came from a living being. That's desensitizing, in my opinion. They also said, the protest group, that slaughtering any animal for food was not necessary. Well, if you're going to eat meat on the scale that we're eating it right now, I'm afraid slaughtering is absolutely necessary. The school said, no, we're trying to teach the children compassion, and that I really agree with. Because we can commit all kinds of crimes against animals, land, environment, and other people when we cannot see or comprehend the effects of our actions. That is at the core of what I'm trying to get across right now. We have to know food. We have to really know it. We have to know where it comes from, what it's made of, who produced it, be connected to it, because in doing that, we will be more socially responsible. We will be more environmentally aware. We will be more in touch with our own bodies and the community around us. It's essential. If we want our nation to be healthier, happier, and have more significant long-term well-being, we need to be connected with that nourishes us. And to do that, we need to cultivate a knowledge, but we also need to learn how to love our food. And that is the most fundamental part of this. It might seem like, oh, well, that's quite nice. See, I love your food, yeah. You know, some kind of foodie or something. No, you must love it, because the easiest way to truly understand something, to truly connect with it, is to love it. I think I've probably run a little bit over time, but I'm happy to talk more about gastronomy later. I'm sorry I didn't really touch on it right now, but basically gastronomy is about cultivating that true knowledge of food from all of those areas, from politics through to aesthetics, economy through to environment. It's about understanding how all of those things relate to and make that, and in turn, make us. So I guess my message from today is, for happiness, health, and well-being, please know your food.
Thank you, Charlotte.